live from Indianapolis, Indiana. Welcome to the Crossroads Sports Radio Show, presented by Scott K. Nichols and State Farm Insurance. And now, here's your hosts, Brandon Reif and Jonathan Birdsong.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Crossroads Sports Radio, episode number 167. I'm your host, Brandon Reif, joined as always by my main man, Jonathan Birdsong. JB, how are you?
Man, I'm doing a whole lot better than the basketball world, let me tell you that. But no, man, I'm doing just fine, man. Ready to have a great show, talk about some great sports, topics that I know kind of floating around the air.
Absolutely. We've got NBA talk tonight. We've got NBA playoffs continuing as we go on. We've got news in the NBA that's broken today. We've got Indy 500 recap, short recap with Indy 500, the greatest spectacle in racing that happened here in Indianapolis this past weekend. We've got some college basketball news and just some overall sports topics to talk this evening on tonight's show. So let's get underway. Let's dive right in to, I guess, the big topic of the day, John. Danny Ainge of the Boston Celtics, president of basketball operations, there for a long time, stepping down, quote-unquote retiring, I'll say. He might come back in another gig. But stepping down, Brad Stevens, the Celtics coach, who we thought might leave for the Indiana job, may not leave, decided not to. He actually is getting promoted from the head coach position to the president of basketball operations now, and the Celtics will be looking for themselves a new head coach. Thoughts, John, when you saw this all start playing out today, and then I will give you my thoughts after I hear yours.
Sure, man, just shocked, just because I thought, once you kind of thought about it, that this was kind of probably already kind of set in place, probably maybe mid-season. If anybody can remember when Danny Ainge kind of made that that very public, it was almost like an apology to Celtic Nation, saying that he didn't do a good enough job putting this roster together. So sort of shocked, thought that he was going to try to, you know what I'm saying, repair what, not necessarily undo what he kind of did. You know what I'm saying? It's not that his time and tenure there was mired in any type of controversy or any type of or a whole lot of losing. You know what I'm saying? There was a transitional period when, everybody can kind of remember when, you know what I'm saying, the big three kind of left and went to Brooklyn. That would be Garnett, Pierce, and I can't remember who else. I think that left when they lost Ray Allen. He didn't go to Brooklyn, but, you know what I'm saying, they lost him as well. But there was that transitional period,
right?
You know what I'm saying, when Doc Rivers let go, Brad Stevens came back in. And everybody kind of went their own, Rondo, that was the other guy. They kind of went their own separate ways. I think Rondo kind of stayed around for like a year or so. So they got rid of him. But there wasn't a whole lot of losing season. There was some building seasons where they drafted Jaylen Brown and they drafted, you know what I'm saying, Jason Tatum or whatnot, and put together, you know what I'm saying, and even Marcus Smart put together, winning roster put together. But I kind of thought that, you know what I'm saying, honestly, Brandon, that he was going to try to repair, you know what I'm saying, or try to improve, I should say, the roster. The Boston Celtics need a consistently scoring big that they can depend upon to get buckets. They're kind of everybody kind of watched them, you know what I'm saying, kind of shoot, try to you know what I'm saying, outshoot, you know what I'm saying, the marksmen that are the Brooklyn Nets, right? And that's a hard task, man. I mean, that's kind of why they had to have a crazy game out of Jason Tatum, you know what I'm saying, the 50-point game that he had. In this past playoff run, they still needed a big. I mean, basketball, whether you like it, don't believe this or not, you still need, you know what I'm saying, a big body, a 6'11" guy or a 7-foot guy down there to get you buckets, you know what I'm saying, either in screen roll or you know what I'm saying. It's nothing against Tristan Thompson. He's just a great offensive rebounder, but you can't depend upon him to get you, you know what I'm saying, that 15 to 17 points per contest. And that's what they are missing. Danny, over the past, I would say, 2 or 3 years, because he's been there as general manager role, the president's role, since I do believe 2007, has like I said, made some great moves. Brandon, if he's talking about retiring, I would like for him to be. If they're gonna fire, I know the Pacers kind of came out and said that Kevin Pritchard's late. Why wouldn't you want to have Danny Ainge? You know what I'm saying? Somebody could say that they didn't win enough, but hell, they did win a championship. He did. They did hang a banner. You know what I'm saying? Under his tenure, time of tenure, and you trust Danny Ainge's draft. The one draft that kind of comes into question when I think about his is the one that they brought them Romeo Langford and Carson Edwards. And the only reason it's not that those guys are terrible or anything like that. They're still very young in their careers. If anybody remembers, they both left. They both left IU and Purdue relatively early.
Right.
But again, they're still very young in their careers. But they are
Grant
also
Williams
guys
is in that draft.
Yeah, but they're also guys that they kind of already have, right? When you think about Romeo Langford, of like his potential of what he could be on the next level, that's what Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum already are. You know what I'm saying? When you think about what Carson Edwards could be, well, gosh darn it, that's what kind of what, you know what I'm saying, Marcus Smart and Kemba Walker already are. So you kind of have that's those are deals that probably should have been made where he either should have traded out. I know you're a great proponent of this, of trading out to get better, but he didn't. You know what I'm saying? And maybe it was greed, you know what I'm saying, if you think about the trade that was proposed this past summer where he thinks it's not a win-win with Danny Ainge. You know what I'm saying? He wanted to trade the Pacers Gordon Hayward for Victor Oladipo and Miles Turner. You know what I'm saying? It's not always a win-win in his mind. That would have been painfully lopsided, even though, you know what I'm saying, Victor Oladipo kind of went down this past season to injury, and even Miles was lost to injury. That still would have been a lopsided trade because, hell, Gordon Hayward didn't last the rest of the full season either. So, I don't see Danny Ainge as a failure. But like I said, I think this is probably something they kind of probably set in stone. I mean, they had set in motion, rather. Just maybe it was probably like a year off, you know what I'm saying, before he was going to do that. Now, but like, you know what I'm saying, with all that being said, now it's kind of up to Brad to figure out what moves that need to be made. I think, me personally, there was always rumors about Giannis going there. There was always rumors about AD going there. But all those require you either moving Jaylen Brown's contract or moving Jason Tatum's contract. And I don't think Danny Ainge wanted to move those two particular pieces. You know what I'm saying? I don't even think, hell, Brandon, when I listened to my NBA beat, he didn't even want to move Marcus Smart. You know what I'm saying? He was, you know what I mean? So again, those are some pieces that I think Brad might, if it's for them to move the needle to improve the roster to get better, they're going to have to split. They're not going to split with Tatum. He's probably off the market. You can take that out your mind. You know what I mean? But right. Some of the other pieces will probably be being changed. It kind of all depends what deal is out there as well. So outside of that, I can't say, be honest with you, though, Brandon, like, was it really a failure this past particular playoff run, if you think about it? Now, again, they don't take a whole lot of excuses, regardless of this being a COVID season, regardless of this guy being out, that guy being out. But think about who was out. You took the Brooklyn Nets, who should have swept. They should have. You know what I'm saying? They should have swept the Boston Celtics, but you took the Brooklyn, you know what I'm saying? And they still were in games. And we'll get to that particular game here in a minute. But they still were in the game, except for the second game. That was a blowout, right? They still were, like, dogfighting for pretty much in all the games and striking distance, right? But they just didn't have all their – the bullets in their gun. They didn't have – I mean, Kemba Walker in and out of the lineup. Williams, the big man, the big defensive guy that they have in and out of the lineup. The Fournier deal finally bear fruit. You kind of seen what – because I was like, whoa, when they brought in Evan Fournier during the All-Star break, trading deadline, I was like, why did you bring in Evan Fournier? You know what I'm saying? But now I kind of see why they brought him in. He is a valuable piece that you can kind of win with. But again, I think it's like I said. I think it's going to be on Brad to kind of figure out what, because they don't, like I said, they don't make excuses. They don't like to make excuses in Boston. They don't hang banners. You don't hang banners by making excuses. You know what I'm saying? So I think one of those pieces, whether it be Jaylen Brown, whether it be Marcus Smart, or even Kemba Walker, they probably won't be there next season in some type of fantastic package to bring whatever they think they can get them over the hump.
Right, I agree. Marcus Smart, I believe, is a free agent after this season coming up. You got to believe the Celtics loved the production they got out of Robert Williams this year. I don't think he was somebody they expected to come in there and be able to produce the minutes that they did. They, you know, and it's weird because they really got hurt when they got rid of Aaron Bain. too. So it's like they, I mean, he wasn't big, big, but he had like that muscle in the post for the Celtics. So when they traded him, that was kind of a weird move there. But it's going to be interesting to see kind of where they go now, what kind of coaching profile they bring in here. There's been talks of several names listed. Kind of as we talked about the Indiana Pacers, with Lloyd Smith has been talked about. Chauncey Billups is another candidate that's been talked about, as some guys with Celtics ties, to come in here. There's a 76ers. I can't think of the Brooklyn Nets elite assistant. Starts with a U. He was in the talk with the Indiana Pacers. He is a top candidate. Jason Kidd. Jason Kidd apparently is a front runner for the Celtics position. I don't know if that's a good position for Jason Kidd to come in, but I mean, hell, if you got Steve Nash in Brooklyn, Jason Kidd in Boston, could it work? Possibly. Definitely need somebody there to a big profile name to handle a big profile city and organization like that.
Yeah. You can take the Van Gundy's and the Mark Jackson's off. They're not, those guys are TV guys now. I got into a debate with some folks earlier today. Why wouldn't Mark Jackson, not a good, I'm not saying he can't coach. I'm just saying he's not a good fit. Plus he's hand down, man down now. But when you, as you're alluding to, there's going to be, I really think it's not necessarily going to be a college guy, so it's not going to be Calipari, who's not necessarily on the hot seat. But, again, we'll get to that in a second when we talk about college basketball. But I think it's going to be a former player. He's going to be the next head coach of the Boston Celtics. I don't necessarily think they went with the smartest man, quote-unquote, in basketball, from, you know what I'm saying, from a basketball, the basketball genius. They went there. They had that for the last, like, 7-8 years with Brad Stevens, did they not? And you know what I'm saying, still. So they just need a little bit of something. Like, remember, and I know you do, when Larry Bird took over the Pacers after, you know what I'm saying, after the stints that they've had
Jim O'Brien.
They were former players. Well, yeah, that was, how could you not be better than O'Brien? But I'm saying they were former players, but like there wasn't necessarily a connect with the team. Knew who they had. So putting Larry Bird, putting a former player, somebody with name recognition, somebody who's actually won in the playoffs, like a Jason Kidd. I don't know about Jason Kidd. I know maybe he learned his lesson, you know what I'm saying, or less lessons that he's had, because he's been a head man with the Knicks. He's been a head man with Milwaukee, and he's had, you know what I'm saying, up and down success with both of those franchises when he was the head guy. Being 2 years or whatnot with the Lakers, maybe he's learned a couple things, matured a little bit. I don't know. From a coach standpoint, I'm not talking about from an adult standpoint. I think Jason Kidd, the player, was a different guy than Jason Kidd, the head coach is. You know what I'm saying? If anybody checks Jason Kidd's file history in Dallas when he was a player. But that might be the way to go. Jason Kidd automatically garners respect. He was a walking, talking triple. I mean, the people I know recently have kind of seen. I haven't heard anybody say Jock Vaughn's name. I wouldn't be surprised that he gets a look as well. You know what I'm saying? He did win a championship with the Spurs so many moons ago. Plus, he's also he was a player in the league as well. But again, Brandon, I think you're hitting on something there. I think it will be a former player that takes over the reins as the head coach.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking at Brad Stevens moving to the front office. Obviously, the Celtics, the brass, the owners, they love Brad Stevens and so much that they want to promote him, which has kind of caught a firestorm as the Celtics, based on some comments that Kyrie's made about the Celtic and Boston people being racist. And then now it's kind of a racial tone where Brad Stevens got promoted for basically a failure is kind of what the quote they said. I didn't say that. They said that. And there wasn't any look into a black person coming in as a director of basketball operations, and probably won't even look towards a black person as a head coaching position there. So what's your thoughts on that spin that's kind of coming out right now about it?
Brandon, that's ESPN. Like, remember when JMV I'm getting amped up. You remember when JMV kind of came on and said that he wouldn't work? He's not interested. Uh-huh. Now, he's not saying he wouldn't work, but he's not interested in working for a TV type of situation because it's all scripted.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? They have to find a hot angle, something that gets people emotionally charged so that they'll sit there and watch. What gets people more emotionally charged than politics, religion, or something that divisive as racism? Again, I'm not saying that we do know there has been racist fans, you know what I'm saying, in the city of Boston, whether it's on football side or the basketball side. Now, what you can't say is that the Boston Celtics as an organization has been racist. My goodness, Bill Russell was the head coach at one point at the Boston Celtics. Casey Jones at one point won championships with the Boston Celtics. Doc Rivers, here in recent history, won a championship. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
They brought him from, I do believe, he was the head coach at the time with Orlando. They brought him up, you know what I'm saying? So I'm not ready. Again, a lot of times people, I wish that me and you were on the show when they start talking that crap, because then that's when I would retort it, right? Well, Bill Russell, head coach. I know that's big gaps in time frame, but Bill Russell, Casey Jones, Doc Rivers, you can't say that that's a racist organization by any means. So Kyrie has hurt feelings. I don't know why that's
bad. Oh, yeah.
Fan, and I'm sorry to say stupid ass. That stupid ass fan that threw the bottle should be more motivated as a fan that Kyrie Irving rent space, that the Boston Celtics rent space in Kyrie Irving's head, that he actually went over and stomped the you know, like, who cares? Like, I mean, everybody's running up and down the daggone court, so at some point everybody steps on the daggone. Everybody steps on the court, on the lucky. Or whatever, but Kyrie made it a point to stomp or whatever, and it makes for good Twitter talk. It makes for good, you know, saying social media. Look at, you know, saying, you know, but you know what? We all know this though. Kyrie does not want that smoke. Kyrie doesn't want to be the villain, but you know, he's renting space. Okay, he came back home. Look who you came with. You came with two other MVPs, little brother. to do this, you had to load up to come with two other MVPs. James Harden is, yes or no, is the MVP. Yes. Kevin Durant is the MVP. You had to come to – shoot, they got a freaking MVP for a coach. So look. I mean, as a fan, you should be like, well, that's just Kyrie being Kyrie, man. I get it. You know what I'm saying? His time and tenure at Boston did not go well. He didn't show leadership. He ain't the leader on this team. That's Durant. I've said this. You've seen it. If Durant don't play, they're a significantly different team. You know what I mean? So, again, I know somebody will say, did check me and say, look at Kyrie's stats, and I'll be like, well, yeah, look at Durant's stats and see what those stats like compared to, you know what I'm saying? That's the driving force of this particular team. So, again, man, you know, him renting space and, you know what I'm saying, the Boston Celtics renting space and Kyrie Irving said they should kind of take that as a win, even though they lost three, you know what I'm saying, 4-1 in these playoffs. So I can't, again, but not to get off on a tangent, sorry, too late, right? I can't say as an organization, even though Danny Ainge said, you know what I'm saying, that he never heard about racist fans, he knows better, you know what I'm saying, that's a trip up, you know, that's him trying to downplay things. You know what I'm saying? But, again, they're trying to put Bill Russell back in the Hall of Fame for being a head coach of the Boston Celtics for winning. You know what I'm saying? Casey Jones, again, God rest his soul, won how many titles with the Boston Celtics? And how many times did he lead them to the finals? You know what I'm saying? As the Celtics head man. You know what I mean? Doc Rivers as well, again. So, again, man, I can't. I'm not going to paint that picture of the Boston Celtics being a racist organization. Sorry. Not here.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I just thought it was a big stretch today when I kept seeing a lot of the talk about it. And it's not – I mean, it was a small little step that Kyrie did on the logo. Like you said, everybody walks the logo. It's not like he stomped hard on it and then twisted. It was more of like a little baby step and then just turned. Like,
no, Brandon, he did it on purpose. He did it on purpose. He made.
Oh,
it.
Absolutely. But who – like,
but
as
Bill,
a fan, would you be soft as Charmin to be like, oh my God, I gotta throw a bottle at him? Or he can't.
Nah,
I can't believe he just did. Grow up.
Nah.
Like.
Uh-uh.
Grow up. You know, Yeah, obviously, the fam was probably a little bit liquored up. They got their ass beat there in Boston. And Kyrie's going to, as I've said before in the past, Kyrie does what Kyrie Irving does and those type of things. So it is what it is. Get over it. Move on. And, you know, that brings me to my next point, John. There's just some stupid crap that fans are doing around this league right now that I feel like if it keeps progressing, it's going to ruin the game for all of us, because there's probably going to be some measures put into the league that it's going to ruin the viewing experience. We got dumbasses throwing popcorn at Russell Westbrook as they're going through a tunnel like they're a zoo animal. We've got the water bottle toss. We've got fans continuing to storm the court during the game. I don't know if fans during COVID forgot how to act at a sporting event or what the deal is, but it's almost like a little copycat, like, oh yeah, well, he did this. Well, I'm going to do this. Or we just lost our damn sense.
You hit everything on the head. They've lost their sense. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if it is being cooped up for a year and not having any type of fan engagement. Of being around the game and not being able to, you know what I'm saying? It's enough to boo for me if you don't like a particular team. it's almost like enough. Remember, they were saying, what's the name, was going bald in the Knicks. The Knicks were saying that, Knicks fans were saying that
Trae Young.
Trae Young was going bald. I mean, that's just, you know, that's funny. Now, of course, it crossed the line when you start to. Yeah, it crosses the line when you start talking about people are, you know what I'm saying, they was calling the half-breed. It crosses the line when you know what I'm saying, somebody's family is sitting at the court side and you're saying racist things. Crosses the line.
Or
do double birds.
I don't even care if you call them an F-bomb. I don't care if you're cussing them out. I don't care if you're giving the double bird. That's your thing. It's the throwing on the court and rushing the court and all that crap. There's no need for it. If you want to give the double bird, give it.
Well, you better be careful giving the double bird to Russell Westbrook if you're in that front court. If you're sitting in the front, man.
Hey, but here's the thing. You and me both know this, that if one of them wanted to come out on the – not one single person that's done this, throwing the popcorn, throwing the water bottle, or whatever, not one single person would approach one of those NBA players outside on the street and do the same thing. Would not happen.
It's true. Absolutely. Absolutely. Maybe they put them back. Maybe they put the – in the bus. I don't know why a fool would run around on the court. That's just idiotic. But, like, walking back towards the back, maybe they put a tent over there so that you can't – you know what I'm saying?
They
have any engagement.
They put a little tarp thing there, and he went through it, I guess. But, hey, I don't have a problem if you want to give the bird or double bird at somebody and you're in the stands, because that's not going to hurt somebody physically. That's
right.
Not going
to,
you know, make it, like, so bad, I guess you could say. I mean, yeah, it's a bad look for you if your boss or your family or whatever see you on TV doing it. But, hey, you know what?
Yep.
It's better than the alternatives. And,
Here's what we'll do, Brandon. On Crossroads Sports, we'll say this. If you're a fan and you feel that, just stay at home. Or if you're there, please, you know what I'm saying, understand that they're prosecuting folks now. So do you really want to go to do you want to go down a central processing, wherever it may be, Indianapolis downtown, New York downtown, because you threw a bottle or you threw a cup of ice on somebody? You want to be in processing with real criminals? And you did something stupid. That's how I would look at it.
Hey, if you get on, it's like I've said in the past, and I said this way before even Crossroads, and even we were at Best Buy. If you come on the court during an altercation or so, hey, you're stepping in their territory, just like in wrestling. If you step over that guardrail in the ring, hey, you're in their territory now. If you get your ass beat, you get your ass beat, a la either Jermaine O'Neal punching out that fan in Detroit that came after him, or those wrestlers. There are people coming in the ring thinking they're Superman, and then they just get destroyed by some of these wrestlers. So
yeah, for sure.
We got our boy real quick. I want to bring him on. I want to bring him on, but he goes through too many topics and he destroys our topics when we want to go about that time and talk about them. So, Decot, I'm going to bring you on here in a minute. I just don't want you to steal my thunder real quick. So, give me 1 second. John, real quick, Lakers, are they in trouble? Down 3-2. No Anthony, Mr. Anthony Street Clothes Davis, as Charles Barkley calls him. here's my thing, and he's out, obviously. LeBron said today, hey, I told AD not to rush back. Take your time, do what you need to do. And my question is, how hurt is he really, though? Because last night, in that first quarter, Anthony Davis. He was running up and down the bench. Like, if you hurt, sit your ass down. Like, if your groin hurts, why are you up and down the court so much? If it really hurts that bad, right, you can't suit up and play.
There's some of this sometimes. I mean, I'm going to take my unprofessional hat off real quick, okay, just for real quick. Does some of this look like it's a setup, like it's fixed? Have you seen the Lakers not play? Have you seen the Lakers play any worse the times that you watched them? You know what I mean? Have you seen LeBron, like, whiff on – so either – my point is either he's hurt because, like, he can't recover going right. I'll be honest with you. Well, that's why I asked you when you said who's hurt. And I get what you're saying. You know, Anthony Davis, he was like rah-rah last night being, like, the fourth – all-star on the bench, the assistant coach.
Mm-hmm.
When I watch, LeBron in defending whoever who was in it, I'd say Cameron Payne. I think Payne got him like three times going right. And I'm like, dude, either he's hurt, you know what I mean, or this is like they just trying to see, you know, flipping this switch to make it go seven, to make the Ravens. So I don't know. But I put my professional hat back on. Yes, the Lakers are in trouble. Because I don't think it's a 30 point blast is not a fix. That's not getting fixed. You wouldn't want to look bad. You know what I'm saying? That bad as a team.
NBA playoffs nowadays. There's tons of blowouts now.
Yeah,
I think they lost and they went into it saying, hey, you know what? There's a chance we were already going to lose this game. They were expecting to get beat by 10, 15 points. And then next, you know, it just ballooned with Booker having a 19 or whatever point quarter in the first quarter. And I texted you, I said, this damn thing's over. I can go to bed in the first quarter. They blitzed them so much. I do think it's going to go seven still, John. I really do. I think, listen, Lakers coming home. I mean, NBA would love for it to go seven too.
They
played bad enough
games
to where they'll recover.
They played bad games. That was a game they should have won. They kind of let get out of control and let Phoenix win. You can't let a team like Phoenix, who is the number two seed for a reason. They played the regular season games. They played well enough to garner a two seed, right? You can't just, you know what I'm saying, thinking that you can turn on a switch, even though you have the superior players in LeBron and Anthony Davis. So they have to make defensively they are in every game. I know somebody, how did you say that? Well, defensively they've been in every game except for last night. But again, like if you don't get buckets out of your defensive stops, you're gonna be a tired defense like the Bears did, like the Chicago Bears get tired because they got poor offensive play from the quarterback. You're going to get tired of going down there and shooting. You know what I mean? I don't know, Brandon. When I watched last night, I seen guys taking shots that they don't know be take shots. Like where was Taylor, the guy with three last names? You know what I'm saying?
Taylor Horton.
Tick. Yeah, Taylor Horton. He hasn't gotten any tick. Again, somebody's going to tell me, a lot of scouts, a lot of coaches, they say that the reason why Montrez is not playing is because he's not a good shooter. Well, damn it. I mean, you look up his numbers historically against the same Suns. He doesn't have bad games against Suns. Like, he averages, like, I mean, you know what I'm saying, you go to Basketball Reference, you can check me on it. He averages like 15 points against these same Suns, except for Chris Paul. This is the same daggone Suns that he's played against since this time in Houston. You know what I mean? And we all know what he's done. We all know what he's done when he was at the Clippers. He's 2-time sixth man of the year. So I get it that LeBron needs to be surrounded by shooters, but Devin Schroeder is a streaky shooter. Andre Drummond is not a shooter at all. You know what I mean? So again, I don't get why from a coach standpoint, why Frank Vogel has not played. He's got DNPs. From Montrezl Harrell. So I don't get that. But there's guys that just necessarily haven't played their best. I know a lot is on the shoulders of LeBron. You know what I'm saying? The shoulders of LeBron James and Anthony Davis to produce. You know what I'm saying? They are accountable for like 60% of the scoring. You know, from if you think about the bubble last year, the championship they won, and even this year. But Kuzma, you know, is averaging like 5 points this game. I mean, this series. That's unacceptable. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That is. From his development, that's unacceptable. I don't want to pick on him. I mean, there's a lot of guys out here that should step up. I just said him, Schroeder. Schroeder's a free agent this year. He's turned down, you know what I'm saying, $90 million offers, $80 million offer from the Lakers. Like, you're looking like a $75 million player now. So like, I kind of get what you're saying too. That I think that they will. Hawk up, you know what I'm saying, and do better in game six. They'll be back at home. But you just don't want to play. Game sevens are unpredictable. They really are. And this particular game seven will be in Phoenix. Chris Paul, he's good. He's about due for a win, man. If you think about it, Brandon, he ain't won a game seven against somebody significant since 2015. And when he was playing for the Clippers and they beat the Spurs, if you recall. I remember that crazy seeding that they had. I can't remember. I think the Spurs were like seven, only because like the West was like so stacked heavy that year, and they were like two or whatever. So, going seven, I don't know about. They got to play their best next. You know, what I'm saying the next game.
I think it goes seven. LeBron has not lost a first round series in his career. I don't think it happens here. I think the NBA does what they need to do to make it go seven games. And
oh, wow.
LeBron and AV move on. You get your ratings.
Damn.
They get their money. We move on.
So you telling me Tim Donaghy's coming out of retirement?
Listen, we'll get to that in a bit. But I mean, he was clapping last night for that fancy foul that they called on Dame Lillard that they could go and review.
Oh my God,
I mean,
Brandon, this has been the worst.
I wasn't
Brandon,
even close.
I don't know what a foul is. What's a foul?
What's
a foul and what ain't a foul? I don't get it. I don't understand, Brandon. I don't.
John, I saw a tweet that said Tim Donaghy was standing up clapping after seeing that performance. Like, it's bad. When you slowed it, that referee needs to be fined, if not suspended, for a call like that. I'm sorry,
because
we have friends. Yeah, we have friends of the program and a friend of mine that's an NBA official, but that was horrendous.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
All right, we'll bring our guy on now. Decott, what's
bring
going on?
Gentlemen, man, so you took my thunder. So I'm going to go in reverse. We'll talk about the fans. It's really simple. Jonathan, I know you mentioned about putting a tarp and all. They've done all that. People have to pay the price, and I'm not saying players going in and beat them down like we did in the Palace, but you have to have a strong, painful consequence to such an idiotic thing to do. And I don't know, I don't think that suspending or removing this person from the building to all games permanently is enough. Okay, fine, we're not going to allow you to spend money in our building. Doesn't do it for me. There has to be some type of precedent. So like, and I'm not calling it a hate crime, no, but sort of like a crime against athletes in this area, right? So all these politicians are drawing up all these bills. Create a bill that punishes a fan who does something like this. You know, you name it, whatever you want to name it, the crime against athletes bill, whatever, right? And then you say this is the consequence for doing this. If it's 30 days in jail, 60 days in jail, mandated, because they have mandated rules for marijuana and drugs and all that, right?
Mm-hmm.
DWIs, all that, right. So do something like that. Because what you do, all they're going to do is they're going to go down to court. It's basically trespassing. They'll plead down to trespassing and disorderly. That's what Jonathan used to do on a weekly basis a few years ago. Disorderly conduct. I'm just kidding. I'll tease it. But what I'm saying, it got to be something separate. It can't be within the framework of what we do, because all it is, they plead it down disorderly or trespassing. You know, they get a fine and they move on. So I think it has to be something separate with regard to professional athletes and stadiums. That'd be my two cents on that. You just can't go pull a Charles Barkley and go out and beat people down. We're not cannibals, right? I mean, we're not animals. That's a cannibal. We're not animals. But then secondly, we got to make sure it's something that's going to be up to where that person who thinks, you know, they're in the stadium in 2 years from now, and they think, nah, that's not what I want to do. I'm not trying to do that. That's going to be the thing that's going to, you know, dissuade them from doing it, not some, you know, shame them on ESPN. The guy got a plug. He's on ESPN, man. He's got his Garnett jersey on, you know, and I'm sure they got a GoFundMe for him. He's already out of – I mean, he'll be out of jail. We'll say Wednesday. He's out of jail now.
Do you think they would limit the amount, even limit more now, maybe the amount of alcohol sales?
I don't think it'll matter. Because all you got to do is go to a liquor store. Reggie and I do this. I mean, well, oops, excuse me. So you just drink before you go into the game. Sorry. Oops. I thought we were at the casino, man, talking. My bad. But,
no, you're good.
But no, to that point, though, man, I think remember what they did a few years ago? They limited the alcohol sales cut off at the third quarter. Man, if you've been getting liquored up for the first two quarters, hey, you ain't drinking nothing in the third quarter anyway.
Right.
So I think it has to be some type of jail consequence. First thing you do, 30 days, 60 days, or whatever the number is. That's my thought on that. Secondly, right, because I'm still working, man, so I'm going to give you all this. The Lakers and Suns will go 7. The Lakers will win. Last night, LeBron was resting. Yeah, he was playing, but he was resting. Anyone who saw the game realized he was probably going 75%. How many times did he go to the basket? I think I counted 4 times to the basket. Right? He was resting while he was playing there. Okay? I think the Suns are a great story. I love Monty Williams. He's an awesome dude, a high character dude, and all of that, right? But the issue isn't that. It's the Laker. It's the star power of LeBron James and of course, Mr. Charmin Soft, right? They're going to beat Phoenix in Game 7, and it'll be close, and people complain about the refs and all that, and they'll go in. I don't think they'll win the title, but I do not see Phoenix coming out of this. The way they shot the ball reminded me of how the Pacers shot the ball in that play-in game before being destroyed the next game. There's no way they'll be able to shoot as well. They're going to give a great effort. That's great. But unless Davis doesn't play, which I think he will play, if Davis doesn't play, maybe. But beyond that, I just don't see the Lakers losing in Game 5. In Game 6, and then losing in Game 7 with a LeBron-led team on a national stage and how bad they want these ratings to be much better. So that's my two cents on it, man. See, I was simple and calm, see, because I'm working. That's why I'm still working, so I got to be calm. I'm not in my car going crazy. So what do you guys think?
Yeah, like I told Jonathan, I said a minute ago, it's going 7. Lakers are going to win. They're going to find a way. LeBron James. He hasn't lost a first-round series in his career. He's not going to let this happen be the first time. Here's my thing. As much as I like LeBron and things he does, there's parts of me that I'm just like, either he's something he says, the flopping on the court, or last night, if you need to get treatment, why the hell can't you just wait another 10 minutes to get off the court?
Man. He's an attention whore. He wanted
now,
the attention.
I have no problem with him doing that, though, if it's like the series clincher and there's going to be the big celebration or something like that. But in Game 5 of a first-round series, you're just going to leave your teammates with 6 minutes. Like, it's like, are you trying to make a statement?
Attention.
Or what is it?
Yeah, attention. Yeah, maybe he's trying to motivate his guys to play hard. I don't know. But regardless, and then when they win in Game 6, see it worked. No, that's not what worked is. The ex-David Stern-led NBA basketball is what got it there. So, yeah, Lakers will win in 7. Phoenix is a valiant effort and all that's wonderful. However, it's bigger than Phoenix, and we all know that.
JB?
Man, we for one, we got to stop. We got to stop painting pictures of the past. You know what I'm saying? I loathe it. I loathe when people say, "Well, Michael Jordan wouldn't did this, Kobe Bryant did this." I'd be like, "Well," and then you can pick apart those two guys' stories as well. Kobe, you talking about the same Kobe that didn't want to shoot, that just kept on passing because he was pissed at his
coach?
Yeah,
exactly. None of them are immune to that. So I don't buy into that either. You're right, JB. You know, like, well, Michael Jordan would never. Stop it.
I don't. This is different. This is a different era of basketball. Obviously, it's a different style of play. So there's still some similarities, you know what I mean, that the kind of cascade. But again, I get what you're kind of saying, Brandon. It is optically very bad. It shows poor sportsmanship, shows all those things, you know what I'm saying, your teammates. Well, shoot, man, your teammates should have walked out with you. Y'all was down, you know what I'm saying?
Don't be alone, right?
You know, you're right, so don't be alone. But, like, no, man, I don't know. So, again, it might be what we do know. He does things. He's 30-something years old. He's not as old as you and I, all of us are here. You know what I'm saying? The way things – I thought it was kooky. This is when they won a championship. He sent that tweet, and it was kind of directed towards Kevin Love, and then next thing you know, Kevin Love turned into Larry Bird the next game. You know, the 4-4 series, man. So again, he uses these things, and I'm not making no excuses for him. Again, like I said, from the era I come from, but you know, saying that would be a no-no. But then I can't be hypocritical because the same era I'm from, where the you know, what I'm saying, Isaiah Thomas didn't want to shake Michael Jordan's hand.
Right.
You know. So
we'll see what happens for sure. That's Friday. So I mean that's Thursday. So all eyes will be on. It'll be the most highest rated NBA playoff on the first round, probably the second round too. So we'll see what happens. But I've got to run. I got to get some stuff done. But I'll definitely be. I'll be listening to you guys, and I'll definitely be calling back in next week. We can talk. Well, it'll be an interesting week away. We'll see what happens.
Absolutely. Thanks, D-Cott.
You guys be safe.
Absolutely.
All right. That's Daryl Cott joining the show as always. Lakers. Seems like the moral of the story is we all believe that the Lakers are still going to win this thing. Whether it be the NBA helping it, the referees helping it, or maybe LeBron just going zero dark 30 mode on it. So, we'll see what happens. John, see Dame Lillard. I watched that game last night because I turned off the Lakers. It was about 7 minutes ago in the Portland game of regulation. I turned it on because I knew the Laker game was pretty much over. The shots that Dame Lillard was hitting, oh, my God, that was an out-of-body experience watching that. The way that he just step across half court. John, no disrespect to Steph Curry, but Dame Lillard may be the most clutch basketball player there is right now, even over Steph Curry. The man it was amazing. I don't know if you were up to watching it last night, but it was – and I know they lost, but he still have a 55 burger.
Right. I'm going to be honest. Right. It's a burger. I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't watch it. I rewatched the most of the highlights and recapped the game this morning. What's weird is, man, he can go through these stints where the game before he went 1-for-10, and it was because McCollum, you know what I'm saying, had a better game than him. They actually won the game. And then – this particular game has more of the story than just that the two overtimes and the Austin Rivers phantom foul. This particular game, they were down big. You know, so they were down. Oh, they were down more than 20 points at some point midway through, and they fought their way through, and like I said, forced the overtime. McCollum had a crappy game, real crappy. I think he shot like 7-for-24. It's weird they can't necessarily get the best situation out of one another at the same time. You know what I'm saying? So they have Splash Brothers capabilities, but I'm not saying they're going to trade McCollum next year or anything like that. It's possible. Okay. Especially with all these moving parts that happened. Coach K and Danny Ainge were going to retire basically today. So it is possible McCollum kind of gets moved, but I don't know, man. They have to, they have to figure out how to, you know what I'm saying, get on the same page, because they are the two most important players of that particular franchise. They got Denver. They got a Denver team. What would it look like if Jamal Murray was playing there? You know what I'm saying? Would we have this? Mm-hmm. Would it even be this close? You know what I mean? As we know, Jamal Murray is a closer. You know what I mean? I don't know. I think the series goes seven. I can't take away from the 55 burger. That was a tremendous performance. You know what I'm saying? It was kind of marred. But again, like I said, all these playoffs games have kind of been marred by the kooky. I wish they would go back to hand check. I really do. I wish they'd allow hand checking, or at least, you know, this freedom of movement crap where you can swing through a guy's hands and that's a foul. I don't, Brandon. That's the only part. I like the athleticism that this league shows. I like the skill positions that bigs can play out, you know what I'm saying, out in space and on the floor. I like, you know, I don't necessarily like all the threes. You know what I mean? I think a lot of teams take too many threes, but I do like the power of the three-pointer, what it can do for you. But, you know, the really big sticking point that I don't like this particular NBA is, like, the officiating. So, if they can improve that over the summer, instead of, like, coming up with these kooky playing games or trying to figure out how to make more excitement or not, you know, keep teams from tanking or whatever, I'll be for that. But Portland's got to figure out – I think Portland gets it to seven. But if they do lose, does that mean Terry Scott, does that mean he loses his job potentially? Maybe. You know what I mean? Because they're not necessarily just going to blow up the roster just yet. You know what I'm saying? But they got to get Dame some help. To where that he doesn't have to go crazy like this, you know what I'm saying, and lose an effort.
Yeah, I totally agree. Dame needs help, and it's been 8 years now with McCollough and Dame there, and they've put people in there.
It's not a bad roster, but
I don't think it's time to get help. I think it's time for Dame to get out. And here's my thing: I don't think anybody in the world is going to fault Damian Lillard for leaving Portland, because he deserves better. He's carried this team on its shoulders the last 8 seasons. And the fact that they just can't get it done, there's no help for him. I have no fault, and I don't think anybody will fault him if he leaves and goes somewhere else, whether it be the Lakers, would it be San Antonio, or would it be somewhere in the East, New York, whatnot. I have no problem with Dame leaving. I like Dame. Who would you rather have in the final 5 minutes of a game, of a playoff game? Would you rather have Dame Lillard or Steph Curry? Because I would, in the past, I would say Steph Curry, but those shots that Dame Lillard has hit, I mean, yes, Steph's the best pure shooter, but the style and the type that Dame has hit way more quality big shots than Steph has.
Yeah, that mytho is evening up. Steph just got those championships. Steph just got those MVPs, regular season MVPs. But like I said, you know what I'm saying, he plays with a better, you know what I'm saying, right-hand man. So they found a common ground. They found a balance to play to one another. Maybe McCollum needs to figure it out, shake the cobwebs loose. Like, well, dude, why do you – it's weird, man. I don't know if they throw each other off or whatever, man, but – I hope we don't start talking about Dame. I really hope we don't talk. I like Dame Lillard as a Portland Trailblazer, but it's hard. That is a small market team. It's hard. It'll be hard for them, difficult for them to get another name to kind of come up there, unless there's a trade kind of happens. But then you'd have to trade McCollum. That's what you would be trading. You'd be trading McCollum and potentially even Norman Powell, to try to get whoever. And then, but then whoever was coming in, they'd have to agree to go. But, like, who wouldn't – right now, like, think about that, Brandon. Who wouldn't want to go play with Dame? You know what I mean? Unless you're already on the team. But, you know what I'm saying, it's Portland. It's not the Lakers. It's not Miami. It's not, you know what I'm saying, New York. So, yeah, I see what you're saying.
Okay. That was ridiculous last night. Just a and here's my theory. I still don't understand how people don't foul. You don't foul – when you're down three into the thing and you just let him come down and pull up. And by the way, we got robbed last night. CJ McCollough stepping out of bounds. We got robbed of a great finish. Got robbed. John, Clippers, they're not dead yet. Clippers come back, tie this series 2-2. Game 5 tonight in L.A. John, I think the Clippers get it done. I don't think they're dead. I think they win tonight's game, go up 3-2. Luka looks hurt.
Yeah, he got a little pinched nerve situation. I hope he's not necessarily using that as an excuse, because it was, I don't know if it happened during the course of the game 2 or game 3, but he did mention it. It looked like the Clippers were about to go through another revamp where, you know, saying we were all questioning if Paul George was going to get traded or if Kawhi Leonard was going to resign or whatever. They made an adjustment. The third game, they made Hardaway and Unicorn Porzingis look bad. They forced the ball out of their hands or forced it into quick shots. The same thing happened. Now, Porzingis had a better game 4, but Hardaway went 1-for-8. And again, they're not necessarily a big three just yet, but they depend upon Tim Hardaway Jr. and Porzingis to have good games in order for, as well as, you know what I'm saying, Luka Doncic to win games. Man, is it going 7? I think it's going 7, Brandon. And if that's the case, then that means game 7 is in the L.A. I don't know, but I think there's going to be more to this particular series. It's not necessarily over. It shows some grit by Kawhi Leonard, not wanting to get swept, you know what I mean? And even Paul George, because like it ain't necessarily playoff P just yet. Now let's not get crazy. You know what I mean? But it shows some grit. And even Ty Lue, you know what I'm saying? Come with some key substitutions. And like I said, they came with a game plan, you know what I'm saying, to take shots away or to put some great defense on Tim Hardaway Jr. If Tim Hardaway Jr. comes out shooting like he did the first two games, him and Luka darn near will win this series by themselves. But as I said, Tim Hardaway has hit a wall, you know what I'm saying, a glacier rather, you know what I'm saying, and you know what I'm saying, and his hot streak is not, you know what I'm saying, he took the wrong time to get cold. How about that? So I don't know. I think the series goes 7.
Okay. Looking at other ones still, we've got the Atlanta Hawks up 3-1 going up against the Knicks tonight, back in the Garden. Knicks with their backs against the wall. Julius Randle has just had a horrendous series for the Knicks. But if the Knicks want to survive, continue to play. They got to survive tonight at home against the Hawks. I like the Knicks to at least win this one, at least make it 3-2 and then lose 4-2 down in Atlanta. Don't you can't afford to lose this, right?
They can't afford to lose, but they're going to lose it.
Uh-oh.
Even if Joel Embiid's knees needs the Knicks to win, but I don't think that happens, man. The Hawks are just playing better basketball than the Knicks are right now. They weren't necessarily separate record wise. They finished the regular season record-wise, the same. The Knicks just won more road games than the Atlanta Hawks did this year, and that's why they were the higher seed. When I look at the talent for talent, I don't necessarily it's a little even. It's a little even on this regard because it's like Derrick Rose and some of the other transplants that the folks have brought in from the stops he brought from Chicago. Everybody's kind of new to, you know what I'm saying, Randall is new to the playoffs for sure, because he was never going to get to the playoffs when he's technically a different player than he was when he played for the Lakers and the Pelicans, right? RJ, this is new territory from him, being a second-year player, fresh out of Duke. RJ Barrett, that is. And then, you know what I'm saying, that's why, you know what I'm saying, the only guy that kind of looks, from a Knicks standpoint, that looks like, you know what I'm saying, with playoff eyes, is Derrick Rose, you know? So, but I think there's just too much talent. I know that's not a cop. That's kind of like a cop-out. Their talent on the Atlanta Hawks side is just playing more connected. And that's going to be a credit to former Pacer coach Nate McMillan, who, you know what I'm saying, as we all know, took over the reins as head coach after about a month when the Atlanta Hawks top brass thought that they should be higher, better than they were technically out of the playoffs when Nate McMillan took over. He's found a way to play all the guys except for Cam Reddish, because Cam Reddish is out. Shame on, you know, Dane. You know what I'm saying? I know me and you are big Cam Reddish fans, right? But he's found a way to get the best out of Dolinari. He's found the best way to get the best out of Trae Young, for sure. And this, mind you, man, like, Trae Young ain't the most polished defender at all, but, you know what I'm saying, this is on the what he's doing offensively. I think he's averaging like 27.5, something like that. This is against a Tibbs defense. And, again, I know defense is a little bit different than what they kind of ran. Tibbs ran in Chicago when he had Joakim Noah and Ben Gordon and those great Bulls teams and Kurt Heinrich or whatever, right? But, again, man, a Tibbs team, you know what I'm saying, let somebody go off. And it ain't just him going off, but the other Bojan is going off as well. He's had some great games. So I think, how could I forget John Collins, you know what I'm saying, as well. So, again, I think they just kind of – the Knicks don't have enough – they don't even have enough I don't know. The reason why I think there's a whole lot of – he put a whole lot of pressure on himself, that being Julius Randle. And they're throwing big bodies at him, whether it's Collins or whether it's Capella, throwing big bodies at him. And you know what I'm saying, he's not – this is all new territory to him. So I think the Atlanta Hawks get it done tonight, and the Hawks will be waiting for the winner of Washington and Philadelphia.
Okay. Speaking of Washington and Philadelphia up 3-1 tonight. They can close it out at home against the Wizards. No Joel Embiid. He is out tonight.
Yep.
A little bit of meniscus tear, but, I mean, it's just going to be day-to-day from what I've seen.
Right.
Is this the Wizards' last stand? I think it is. I think Philly finishes them off tonight. And then really needs to the Eastern Conference Finals, I feel like, whether they play Atlanta or New York. I know it's kind of crazy to call that now, especially with Atlanta, but playing as well. I think Philly's got an easy route there. As long as you got a healthy Joel Embiid, no other injuries. Tobias Harris, I think, will step up this evening. Ben Simmons.
Right.
And, you know, they're just a whole different makeup of a team with Doc Rivers. So I think they get it done tonight.
I think they get it done tonight. They should be there. The Washington Wizards are one of those Jekyll and Hyde teams. I think the Philadelphia 76ers just kind of probably in shock that Big Joel wasn't returning. You know what I'm saying? They run a lot. I mean, they depend upon Joel Embiid for a lot. They depend upon rebounding to scoring to blocking shots, all those things. There's a reason why he's an MVP, one of the top three MVP candidates in the league this year. So I would consider, judge on the air of caution. You know what I'm saying? They need Joel to play against potentially the winner of the Bucks and the Nets. That's what they need Joel for. You know what I'm saying? You're going to need, you know what I'm saying, your number one guy when you play those. And I'm not saying you just, you know, and all you got to do is win one game. In the next, right, they probably got to win one game, and they have enough talent level to do that. Again, I know somebody's gonna say, listening to my voice right now, saying, "Well, what about Westbrook? Ain't he the walking, talking triple double? What about Bill? Ain't he a guy capable of putting up 40?" Sure, yeah, but that's kind of all they got. The other guys that they kind of have around them, and even those guys themselves are inconsistent. That's why I call them Jekyll and Hyde. They're inconsistent their damn selves. So, I think Philadelphia 76ers get it done. And, you know what I'm saying, they wait on the winner of the Atlanta Hawks and the Knicks, hoping that the Knicks win so that they can at least get more rest time for Joel Embiid.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I totally agree with that. Nets and Bucks, we're going to have a hell of a series here. Bucks disposed of the Miami Heat very quickly, 4-0. Brooklyn, they disposed of 4-1. So we got a healthy KD, got Harden and Kyrie all playing well, going against the Bucks and Giannis. I'm excited for this series. This could have been a potential Eastern Conference Finals, but you're going to get in the semifinal match. I think this series, John, I think it goes at least 6, if not 7, but I think 6.
You know, me and my Bucks fandom, man, newfound fandom, newfound appreciation for Giannis. If the Brooklyn Nets go into these lulls where Kyrie's not interested, you know what I'm saying, there was a couple games where, you know what I'm saying, he had to wake up after halftime, or these lows when Kevin Durant starts turning the ball over mid-court. The Milwaukee Bucks are a better defensive unit that doesn't necessarily depend upon three-point shooting like the Boston Celtics did. And they are 100%. Though Kevin Durant is a tough matchup, Giannis is a tough matchup himself. They kind of counter each other out. But this is a new backcourt for the Bucks. This ain't the guy that couldn't hit the outside of a barn. I can't think his name is that terrible. They traded him out to New Orleans. They now have Uncle Drew Holiday, who's obviously an upgrade, and who's probably only like a one-time All-Star. You know what I mean? But it's obviously an upgrade in the backcourt. They will miss Difensinjo. I know I messed up his name, but he got injured during the Miami Heat series, like Game 3 or whatnot. He is a good rotation guy for him, either defensively, and they also kind of depend upon the score a little bit. They do have guys that can step up. Forbes and Bobby Portis. You know what I'm saying? They do have guys. And hell, even Pat Connaughton, believe it or not, from Notre Dame, has stepped up in these playoffs. So they are more of a team. Even though Giannis is a superstar, and I would say that Uncle Drew Holiday is the secondary superstar, they are more of a team oriented. They have bench support, I would say. So it's not going to be a cakewalk like it should have been. Like it was against the Boston Celtics, so I you say six, I say seven, and it kind of depends. Brandon, you know what? It kind of depends if Brook Lopez shows up or Robin Lopez shows up in Brook Lopez's body, because he's the difference. He is a difference maker because he's a matchup nightmare. And maybe they used DeAndre Jordan because they didn't use him this particular first round against Boston. But like he's a guy that consistently can hit open jump shots. I think he falls in love too much with his 3-point shot, but he does get to the line. He does rebound. He does block shots. Sometimes his hands are garbage. You know what I'm saying? When you throw him the ball down low, and all you got to do is get a layup. But he could be an X factor for the Milwaukee Bucks.
Okay. Looking at the Western Conference, the Jazz. John, they were down 0-1. Memphis beat them the first nine. And then we said, uh-oh, here's the Utah Jazz of the old. Jazz came back, have won three straight, 3-1 Utah going into game five, I believe, this evening.
Yeah, it's a wrap. Memphis, great learning experience from Memphis. They needed, as you can tell, you know what I'm saying, it was a big, huge controversy last year. We even kind of talked about it last week with not having Donovan Mitchell. Utah kind of holding Donovan Mitchell out of the lineup just so he could get cleared, you know what I'm saying, per, you know what I'm saying, the Utah, you know what I'm saying, medical staff. All that drama kind of subsided, hasn't reared his ugly head, you know what I'm saying, and he's played, you know what I'm saying, magnificently. I'm not saying that on the other side who he's played against hasn't, you know what I'm saying, John Morant has had his own coming out party as well. They just don't have enough scoring to keep up, scoring or defense, rather, to keep up with the Utah Jazz. Utah Jazz is a veteran group. The Memphis caught them with their pants down, you know what I'm saying? I think this ends tonight, and Utah awaits, I think, who they play. Who would they play next? They would play
Clippers or winner, Mavericks.
yeah, they get to chill for the next couple of days. Like I said, I think Clippers and Mavericks are going seven.
Yeah, absolutely. We talked about Clippers and Dallas already. We talked about Lakers and Suns, Denver and Blazers. We talked, we finished off already the other three series in the Western Conference. So what we're going to do is real quick, John, we're going to hit a couple ad reads, get our sponsors, get them some love, and then we'll come back. We're going to hit some quick hitters from there. We'll be right back.
Yep.
You've changed thousands of diapers, cut off hundreds of crusts, played hours of peekaboo and duck, duck, goose, because you'd do anything for your kids. That's why it's so important to protect them with life insurance from State Farm. State Farm insurance agent Scott K. Nichols will help make it easy and affordable to help protect your family no matter what the future holds. Because for the people you'd do anything for, life insurance could mean everything. Call State Farm agent Scott K. Nichols in Indianapolis today at 317-243-2222. 3509. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Also, we're going to thank our sponsor, Maverick Custom Motorsports, where ideas are created, dreams are born, specializing in custom motorcycles, boats, slingshot jeeps, and trucks, offering pickups, deliveries, and shipping worldwide. Check them out today at Maverick Custom Motorcycle or CustomMotorsports.com for more attention and more details, and they will be able to hook you up. All right, John, we are back. Real quick, Indy 500. 500 was this past weekend. Helio Castroneves, four-time Indy 500 now champion, just had an incredible drive. He was on a one-off with Shank Dean. He got let go from Team Penske a couple of years ago for Young Guns. He comes back, wins race, back and forth lead changes towards the end. Two laps ago, which I actually thought they looked too early. It was set up a race with the lap traffic, but Helio was lucky enough to be able to get in at the draft of the lap cars and not slow it down to where he could finish. So it was good to see that. It sucks for Scott Dixon and Alexander Rossi, two of the favorites. That first caution flag as it came out for a wreck in the pits by Stefan Wilson. They were trying to save fuel out there for their fuel run, but they end up running out of gas. Their engines died out. So it's an Indy car. It takes a little bit to get it back going. They got caught lap down. And unlike NASCAR, where if you're the first lap car down when a caution comes out, you get the lucky dog and move to the backfield. Indy car, you got to earn it. You got to pass the leader and then have a caution come out if you're going to be on that lead lap. Scott Dixon ended up doing that. But, I mean, it was – It took those both out of contention the entire race pretty much to win there. Simon Pagenaud had a great run. He was coming up towards the end. John, the Indy 500 this year had 5.5 million viewers. It was the most since the 100th running in 2016. There was no blackouts here and locally. Also, there was 7.1 million people peaked viewership at the end of the race. It was the most watched event over the weekend as well.
Brandon, I was at the gym while I was on, before it was on, man. I was approached by a guy. I mean, you know how guys are in the gym, man. A guy wanted to pay me $50 to take him out by the track. I said, man, he gave me his whole sob story about how he wanted to see the spectacle of racing. That he never been, he's only been here in Indianapolis a couple of times, a truck driver, and how he only been in Indianapolis a couple of times, and that, you know what I'm saying, he just really wanted to go see it. And he offered me $50. I said, dude, you know they got Uber. I think or Lyft or whatever, you know, so a taxi, it'd take you out there. Nobody can get you to the track anyway. You can't get directly to the track unless you take a shuttle or something like that. But I just thought, it kind of speaks to the spectacle and the name that it kind of carries. Indianapolis 500 still carries with people. As everybody kind of knows, COVID pushed the Indianapolis 500 last year to August. You know what I mean? So, you know what I'm saying, for it to get back on, for Indianapolis 500 this year to get back on in the place and the live fans and whatnot, I think it was a great for the city and great for a fan experience for everybody that attended. That being said, Brandon, shame on me, even in my, you know what I'm saying, limited knowledge of Indy racing, man. I should have went with – I thought BK, my guy from the Netherlands, I think he's from the Netherlands, was going to win. Because I listened to him on his interview time on the radio, and he seemed like a confident – didn't seem cocky, but he seemed very confident in his vehicle and his team. And I know he led for a while there, but kind of fell short, obviously. But shame on me for not picking somebody who won it before. How many guys in this race were former Indy champions? I know when you talk about Scott Dixon, when you talk about Helio, I think who else was in there?
Tony Kanaan.
Tony Kanaan, a guy from last year.
Alexander Rossi, Simon Pagenaud, yeah, Takuma Sato. Yeah, there was seven champs in this race.
Yeah, I should have picked somebody he had already won. That's kind of cool. The Helio won because obviously there is a sub story to this. You know what I'm saying? The breakup. I guess it was a mutual breakup between him and the Penske. But he's not a Penske driver. He's not even like a full time driver anymore.
Correct. Yeah. He was not given a full time ride. So it was like a one off, kind of like Dan Weldon's was back in 2011.
Yes. So it's like unprecedented. A lot of things are unprecedented. And with him winning, like I said, it was very historic. He joins, you know, I think the only four-time winners are Rick Mears, off the top of my head, Rick Mears and A.J. Foy. I know somebody else. I know there's like another guy that's won four times before.
Allister Sr. Like,
yeah. To be with those names, man, it's something else.
Yeah, absolutely. And shout out Mario Andretti, John. After we had Danny Bridges on talking about his time with Mario Andretti, I see him the next day in Starbucks. And then, lo and behold, on Saturday when I was just at work and walking down the street, I ran into his family who remembered me. And then and there was Mario. So I would get my picture with Mario.
Made it happen. Made it happen, man. I'm glad.
Two-seaters next, right?
Yeah, you got to get in the two-seater next, man. You got to get like Danny Bridges. You got to get in the two-seater seat and drive around Mario, you know what I'm saying, 190 miles an hour. Crazy.
Listen, I just saw Danny Bridges post a picture on Facebook with Bob Baffert. Baffert's got himself in some trouble. Another failed drug test for that horse, so he's just suspended from Churchill Downs for 2 years. So no Kentucky Derby the next 2 years for Bob Baffert.
Wow. Well, he said he wasn't cheating, but he said he wasn't cheating. The horse, on the other hand, not so much.
Not my fault. It's the horse's fault. So we'll see. John, Naomi Osaka withdrew from the French Open, not wanting to speak to the media. And there was some – I was trying to get more details on the reason, but – I felt like she was kind of bullied out. Well, then you're not going to – by the media and the Tennis Association. Much or not.
Brandon, you know, is it bullying? You know, coming with – a lot of with these jobs, whether it's NBA guy, NFL, like afterwards, man, you're required to talk to the media. The media can be snarky when they don't want to be, you know what I'm saying, when they don't want to be a friend. But they also a lot of times when you want to push your brand, when you want to speak your piece, whether it's whatever cause you believe in, or whether you think you're being treated unfairly, or whether you think you're, whether you want to get that endorsement deal because you got to put your pitch in with whether whoever, you know what I'm saying, I want to be on the Wheaties box. You know what I'm saying? The media is your, that's when you use the media. So, I don't want to be insensitive of her plight because, you know what I'm saying, a lot of times, you know, hell, Brandon, I get nervous on live. You know what I'm saying? I get nervous and I start talking even faster. You know what I'm saying? So the mind sometimes plays tricks on you, and you don't necessarily want to, you know what I'm saying, give somebody the incorrect answer because, again, that can also happen with the media. If she's asked a question or posed a question and it goes sideways, and then next thing you know, 10 different .coms or 10 different papers are saying, well, this is, you know, and then she got to issue an apology. She feels a certain way answering certain questions and being around that environment. I don't know, man. I wish there was a happy medium for her. To where, because she's an up and comer, right? She's one of the more talented tennis stars in a sport that doesn't necessarily get the respect and the salute that it used to. You know what I'm saying? It just doesn't. You know what I'm saying? I think people like to, most people like to boo Serena and Venus Williams when they're winning. They're not necessarily, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm talking about the majority. You know what I mean? They're not necessarily, you know what I'm saying, there to watch them win. They're there to watch them lose. And when they don't lose, you know what I'm saying, it's like, well, you know, kind of like that. You know what I'm saying? She showed to be somewhat of a media darling. So, but again, like I said, man, you know, she has some, you know, some feelings about, you know what I'm saying, talking with the media and answering, and, you know what I'm saying, sometimes questions that are uncomfortable for her to answer for whatever reason. So I wish there was a happy medium to where, you know, the Tennis Association was more, you know, what I'm trying to say, more helpful, more understanding. They just kind of sided with the media, you know what I mean? So I think she'll be back. And after, you know, she, maybe she gets, I mean, I don't think she needs the, you know, hold up, like, maybe she needs, who knows what she needs. I don't want to speculate, you know what I'm saying, whether she needs a speech therapist or a counseling or whatever, you know what I'm saying? You know what I mean, but.
Okay. Let's see. Interesting stat, John. There's already been over 350 early entrants to this year's NBA draft. If I remember right, there's only 60 picks. And 350 people have declared?
Yep. I don't.
Sun doesn't add up. Somebody's going to be disappointed, I think.
Yeah, going to be a lot of disappointments, man. A good coach friend of mine, and I'm not going to say who he is, but a good coach friend of mine saying a lot of guys are using, and it still doesn't make sense because your college coach still going to tell you what you need to work on if you're a friends kind of guy to get to the NBA, right? Your college coach is also going to tell you also how we going to win basketball games here at wherever, you know what I'm saying, whatever college institution that you're playing at. But your college coach is also going to – the assistants as well are going to tell you what you need to do. But then that's when your the other side of that story, Brandon, is when your homies and your friends and your family are saying, oh, man, you averaged, you know what I'm saying, 19 points and seven rebounds. You should go – you'll probably go to in the first round. Well, mm-hmm. No. You know what I'm saying? As we all know, college game, college spacing is a little bit different than the NBA spacing defensively. As we all know, we just said, you got to be able to shoot from outside if you're a big man. Or hell, you know what I'm saying? You got to be more special than just the, you know what I'm saying, 20 points, or 10 rebounds, 10 assists kind of guy in college. And if you have that, that's great, but you got to be more than that. You know what I'm saying? I just looked at another draft board. They got AU Dosumu. Remember, he went from like being in the middle part of the lottery between like 9 and 12. That dude's going to be able – he's going to be right around where the San Antonio Spurs pick at this year. I looked at three different draft boards, you know what I'm saying? So again, now scouts are telling guys, or now it's kind of coming out, dude, you can't do this. Yes, you can do that. Yes, great that you're a shot maker or at this level, but – You're also going to be responsible for doing this at this level as well.
See, the Pacers are at another Corey Kispert again, another white guy in the mock draft.
Well, here's the thing, man. I know me and you a couple weeks ago, man, we kind of dragged Corey Kispert because we seen what he could do or couldn't do against athletic, you know what I'm saying, talent against Baylor. But again, you know, can he be a Pat Connaughton? Maybe. Can he be a – I'm trying to think. It was my guy. I used to play for Oklahoma. Played for there for years. He just retired a couple seasons ago. Played for Kansas. I know this is terrible. It's terrible radio, man. I should have wrote it down. But, you know what I'm saying? He just retired. We'll take his call. But, like, no, man, I think Corey Kispert might be able to stick, but, like, why would I spend a lottery pick on something on Pat Connaughton? You never would. You know what
right.
I mean? So I don't know, man. Guys are going to come from they're probably getting a rude awakening this summer, and maybe they filter back into school, and to get, you know what I'm saying, learn, improve their game, and then maybe some of them even try to go G League. Who knows?
Okay. Well, we're going to take a call. One of our main guys calling in here. We're going to take it in a second, but I got a new intro for him.
It's so hard for me to sit back here. And this studio, looking at a guy out here hollering my name, when last year I spent more money on spilt liquor in bars from one side of this world to the other than you made. You're talking to the Rolex-wearing, diamond ring-wearing, kid-stealing, wheeling-dealing.
He's probably got a few Rolexes.
Jet-flying. Son of a gun, and I'm having a hard time holding these alligators down.
Ladies and gentlemen, from the KFAB Connection, Fred Feldner. Fred, what's going on?
What's happening, fellas? Man, there's so much to talk about. I feel like there's like a month's worth of topics to talk about, but I don't want to take up too much of your time.
No, go right ahead. What's your main focus one you got on your head?
I mean, first off, congrats to Ben Wallace for making it into the Hall of Fame, man. Like, as an outsider here in Hoosier land, it's funny here, and I'm expecting the hate from, you know, some jaded Pacer folks and everything, but hearing the talk of that Ben Wallace doesn't deserve to go into the Hall of Fame, I had one dude tell me, oh, man, this Lakers team, this year's Lakers team, the one that just got blown out by 30 last night, this Lakers team, they're a way better defensive team than the Pistons. I'm like, dude, they averaged, what was it, 60? Their opponents were 68.7 down the stretch, like, for the last 40 games. Like, that's unheard of, man. And Ben Wallace was a big part of that. The only player to get more blocks than fouls and more steals and turnovers. Like, come on
right now.
We're talking about stats here, not just your favorite player. He played for the Pistons, like, actual tangible facts. So, yeah,
Fred,
that was
Fred,
the biggest
you also got it. Fred, you also got to know that you're smarter than comes to, like, you know what I'm saying, chopping up stats and whatnot. So when people come out with these goofy little stats and reading plus-minus reports or even comparing 15 years ago NBA to even 15 years for today's NBA or even compared to the 70s NBA, you kind of got to take it with a grin and be like, oh, okay, yeah, you're right, bro.
Oh,
you're right,
yeah.
Sure.
yeah. Oh, yeah. I give them the Axel Foley Beverly Hills Cop, okay, you know. You're like, all right, okay, gotcha. Yeah, pretty much, man. Yeah, so there's no debate. It's just you got to remind some of these goofy people that make comments as bombastic as that. Like, oh, you know, Ben Wallace doesn't deserve it. Like, oh, okay.
Nah, man, you look at Ben Wallace's resume. He's got the All-Stars. He's got the All-Defensive Teams. He's got a rebounding title. He's a significant number on even the Pistons all-time block leader. It's not, he's not number one, but he's, I don't know where, I think he's like maybe, I think, I know he's in the top six, I do believe, I can't remember, I don't have the stats in front of me right now, but no, man, well, his resume speaks for itself, and he's got a championship, how could I forget that, you know what I mean, so, definitely.
Hey, Bird, not to cut you off, but he is, no, in fact, the all-time blocks leader, 1,486 blocks.
See, there you go, there you go, so, but Fred, I know Brandon's chomping at the bit, man. I am too, man. One, Mark Henry goes over. Well, we'll talk about the pay-per-view too, but Mark Henry comes over to AEW, and Vince McMahon has fired, well, you know, let go, severed ties with pretty much everybody. Two big names, at least, well, three, I should say. Ruby Riott, Aleister Black, and Braun Strowman. I did not see any of those names getting cut, I'll be honest with you. Some of the other folks, maybe. But those, especially Strowman, and I know they haven't necessarily used Strowman in a proper manner since they took him out of the Wyatt family. Yeah, since they took Strowman out of the Wyatt family, I haven't got it.
In fact, his shirt is up for pre-order still on WWEshop.com. Like, how crazy. I guess Aleister Black was on, well, his mama called him Tommy End. I'm going to call him Tommy End. Tommy End was on Twitch. And he said that they did, in fact, give him the old runaround about budget cuts for him getting released. So they're still using that excuse for people when they had the most profitable year in their company's history.
Yeah, I didn't see Strowman coming again. You know,
nor did I. Did you see what the extended rumors are because of that? Because I guess Braun had one of those big, hefty five-year deals that they were slinging around to everybody. I think my grandma got an offer for 5 years to report to SmackDown. Braun Strowman's contract was super lucrative, so there's a lot of scuttlebutt on the interwebs. Take it with a grain of salt. It's the internet, but there's a lot of – I mean, and not even just from Joe Blow 22 on Twitter, but – you know, people from Fightful and Mattman and other of the more notable wrestling podcasts outside of Kayfabe Connection, you know, that have been saying that this might allude to WWE potentially selling or NBC or the Mickey Mouse giving them, you know, truck and Vince McMahon just going, you know what, I'm just going to ride off into the sunset in Greenwich and just sell this company off. Because it's bizarre. It makes no sense. And just one last point, and I'll let it breathe and let you guys comment on it. But what the most bizarre thing beyond just these cuts from today is the fact that on paper, if we look at the WWE roster as it stood yesterday, even today, it doesn't matter, you know, they have the most talent that they've ever had in their company's history. And not just like, and I know some people would argue the golden era when they had, you know, Macho Man, Honky Tonk, and Warrior, and Hogan, and Andre, and like all the dudes of yesteryear that we loved. But let's face it, like athletically and like can give you a five-star match, it was a lot of character stuff more than actual wrestling. Like you're going to get five-star matches out of people. So as I said, they have the most talent, wrestling talent, than they've ever had in their existence. And they've presumably just squandered it away. And now it's to the point where they're so arrogant, they don't even care if another company takes the fat that they trim, because that's how arrogant they are. And in fact, it's just, it's a bit, like Jay-Z said, I'm not a businessman, I'm a businessman. That's Vince McMahon right now. That's Vinny Mac right now. So, you know, it's bizarre that they've squandered so many talented people away. And, but, you know, I think a lot of those people, same with Paul White, same with Sting, same with Christian, to quote Mark Henry when he had his little peach blazer on, because that's the only thing people can quote of him in WWE. They can't go to a match they liked, but that's always everybody's go-to, the moments instead of the matches. But Mark Henry said, I got a lot of gas left in the tank. That's presumably what I think a lot of the legends want to do. They don't want their legacy to be bookended by, you know, whatever crappy ending that was in store in a company that just has no vision for them, or, you know, they used them up dry and they hung them out to dry. Like, oh, okay, well, we're done with you, you know, so there's a lot to it, but
Yeah, you bring up a good point, man, because I remember Slaughter coming back and they made him look bad when they would, you know what I'm saying, when it was time to, like, I can't remember who they had, Randy Orton, they, you know, was Legend Killer, or they made him a stooge at one point. I think Slaughter was a stooge. And this dude was, you know what I'm saying, Slaughter was mean, green, kicking ass machine. You know what I'm saying? Either coming from the G.I. Joe world of cartoons, or when they put the title on him and he had a tremendous heat when he turned his back on quote unquote America during that program. So and what they kind of done with Sting, we all know Sting is 60 some years old. They clearly AEW could clearly, you know what I'm saying, job him out and have him lay down for whoever, but that hasn't been the case. They put him in, it's a little slow, I will say that, but they put him in smart matches. They put him in smart matches.
Did you see his match on Saturday?
Well, I'm getting to that point. They put him in better matches. And even in, like I said, this particular, you know what I'm saying, it might have been something that you or I or even Brandon doesn't know about. Like, you know what I'm saying, it might take time to get in shape, to take a bump that used to be, again, he is 60-some years old. You know what I mean? So that bump you took at 35, you know, if that meme that was floating around, you remember, I know a couple months ago, it might take a little bit of time or even to get in shape, rather. That's what they're basically kind of trying to say, you know. But from the pay-per-view, the biggest things I took from that pay-per-view, the Double or Nothing, was the fact that Britt Baker went over as the champ, finally. Obviously, you know what I'm saying, the Pinnacle and Inner Circle, that I don't think that's not coming to an end anytime soon, their feud or whatever. I think it gets even exacerbated. But I was not necessarily a fan of the ending of the Cody match. I don't want to mess up my man's name. Did he wrestle?
That was the only blemish on the pay-per-view, in my opinion.
Right.
Uh-huh.
I agree.
But, outside of that, I thought it was good. They got back, you know what I'm saying, they got fans, you know what I'm saying, fans back into the stands. I thought it was a good pay-per-view, real solid. If I had to give it a grade overall, you know what I'm saying, nothing in my opinion matters. I give it a B+ overall, you know.
That's fair,
Again, even some of the things that people don't like about Kenny Omega, that stuff's kind of it's coming bearing fruit. And even Tony Khan, him becoming an on-air personality more and more, that's bearing fruit now. You know what I'm saying? It's probably taking a little bit more time. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes you get out there and, you know what I'm saying, you go for what you know, and you know what I'm saying, without putting a whole lot of thought into it. And I think they kind of put some thought into it now. And, you know, the tide, the winds that might be turning AEW's way with this fat trim. You never know.
Now, to piggyback off that, did you see the announcement? Not one, but two of the upcoming pay-per-views, All Out, taking place in Chicago. Well, Hoffman Estates, technically. September 5th, and then Full Gear taking place in St. Louis. So your boy is going to be at both shows. I already booked my hotel room for the All Out show, and then I'm going to jump on and get a room for the St. Louis show, too, because they're taping that Rampage, that new Rampage show, that Friday, and then it's a Saturday pay-per-view, so it'll be a back-to-back billing in St. Louis. With that, with All Out, if you do your math, especially from the people, and we're not even talking like Daniel Bryan's a free agent, Samoa Joe, that whole group, that they'll be well before All Out. But if you do your math, the people that were just released today, not that all of them are going to jump ship, but if you do your math 90 days from now, that'll be a couple days before All Out. So All Out has the potential to have some pretty big debuts and could really, you know, take up the interest of everybody that weekend. And as far as the wrestling world's concerned, they could really make some noise that weekend and add some people to their brand. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. That's for sure.
I'll be on it. I will be on it.
Okay. Yeah, I like the pay-per-view. I didn't think there was a bad match at all during it. I really thought Cody would put over Old Boy. I don't want to mispronounce his name, but I was shocked.
Rogo, yeah.
Because as well, they kept talking about the American Nightmare, you know, the American, like, building that up, and then just kind of, he won. So, tag title match, I thought it was good. I thought it was a little too soon maybe to have Moxley and Kingston win the tag titles there. I thought maybe down the road a little bit more as an opportunity. But Jungle Boy winning the briefcase or the match, the title match. You know, I don't know. It was a I can't even say his last name. I know Zack Ryder. That's what I'm going to call him, Zack Ryder. Poor guy.
Matt,
I don't have his other name.
Matt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, he gets thrown out first, and I'm just like, come on now. Like, I feel like he had a big push at the start, and then it kind of just went away a little bit with him. I'm still waiting on Guevara to have his big, big push. You know, obviously with this Pinnacle thing, I think it's been a lot about Jericho and MJF, obviously the two faction leaders. But I do think at some point I'd like to see, as Jericho kind of transitions kind of out of that a little bit, as to where Sammy then has his big one-on-one summer or fall or winter feud with MJF that kind of elevates both of them a little bit higher up.
Yeah, did you notice too, like, Sean Spears and Sammy were the two that went down to the ring and finished the match? Like, I really like that little touch there that, you know, it could have easily been MJF and Jericho going down to the ring, but the focal point had been so much on them throughout this feud that they gave shine to the guys who really needed it. The Proud and Powerful tag team, LAX, I always call them LAX, they're them and Hager both, like, I almost feel like Jericho gets too much of the shine. Like, Jericho and MJF kind of take up, they're just like a vacuum of it, and they're so charismatic, they're so good at what they do, it's not their fault, but it is a detriment to the other guys in the faction, especially on the Inner Circle side. Like, I'm waiting for Proud and Powerful to, like, break out and, like, have that breakout match, or, like, go for the tag title or, like, something. They're kind of just idle. Same with Hager. He's kind of just idle. I like that he talks and he's pretty funny. Like, he's showing more of his personality. But I want to see more out of them. And so that time will come. But I agree. Like, there's just certain members of the Inner Circle and even with the Pinnacle that you're kind of waiting for when's their breakout match or, like, their breakout promo or, you know. So we got a whole summer to figure that out. But, yeah, I mean.
Let me ask
you
guys this.
Yeah.
Because it's pretty cool. I kind of like it. How about Moxley? And it's been a couple weeks, maybe a month or two now. But Moxley coming out with the Wild Thing theme. I like it. How original it is. They got the music rights for it. I'm interested on your guys' thoughts on that entrance.
Yeah, well, so I mean, that's a straight up. Oh, go ahead, Bert.
Nah, go ahead, Bert. I'm good.
Oh, I was just going to say that. So that theme is a direct tribute to Sushi Onita, who of FMW fame, the exploding barbed wire match. Yes, that did take place before AEW, all that good jazz. He was essentially like the Sandman extreme dude of Japan. So he came out to that Joan Jett Wild thing. And what's funny is this is all hearsay, but it seems about right. I think what happened, remember when he fought Yuji Nagata on Dynamite and he randomly came out to the Trogs version, which the Trogs version, you know, pretty tight too, the oldie version. I kind of liked it. And notice it was a one-off. He never came out to it. After that week, he came out to the Joan Jett version. What happened is, you know, whoever's working, you know, the music or copyright, whatever, legal, whatever, whoever in AEW, like they're like, oh, we need Wild Thing for Moxley. And they're like, oh, okay. They give him the Trogs version. He's like, no. I want the Onita version. I want the, you know, the Wild Thing, Rick Vaughn, you know, Major League Wild Thing. So I thought that was hilarious. So yeah, but it is a straight up tribute to Onita because that's like his idol and he's essentially the American version of Onita. But it fits him well. I love it.
John? Right.
I like the fact that, again, I know we kind of crap on what Vince does or doesn't do. Vince used to, or at least the people that he employed, used to listen to the wrestlers a little bit instead of giving them spoon feed them, like, this is what you're going to say, this is what you're going to come out to. And this kind of speaks to, you know what I'm saying, Tony Khan's door or, you know, whatever booker just underneath Tony Khan listening to, like, hey, man, this is what I want to try out, this is what I want to do. And then they kind of work it and see if it sticks. So it doesn't necessarily always work out 100% smoothly transition-wise, but this works for Jon Moxley. I'm glad Urban Meyer showed up. I was waiting for it. I will. And if the season turns sideways, I will ask you to see more Urban Meyer at more AEW shows.
What about? I just finished the Broken Skull sessions with the Godfather on there, and
I didn't watch that yet. Yeah, how was it?
His story was I liked it. It was good. Some stories I didn't know, some that I did. His stories with the Undertaker, that Taker did talk about with him, were pretty interesting. And just talked about his gimmicks. I didn't realize that they attempted to go with a second version of Papa Shango. And that was right before he went into Nation of Domination. But the look, like, he was all dunned up in his makeup. His makeup looked good with the skull that they were going to use. And it was actually, I guess, painted by – say what?
Yeah. I was just saying he was jacked, too. Like, he was in great shape.
Yeah, and it was the face paint was made by Jerry Lawler. It looked great. It would have fit perfect with the jacket. That version of Papa Shango would have been excellent. And then Vince just said, we're going to throw you with Ron Simmons and them and Nation Domination. And then you guys are going – but if you think about it, and he even said on there, and I got to thinking – that Nation Domination, those four members, that was all kind of like a little something that says, hey, let's put these guys together before we kind of – and this is like a little stepping stone to build each of the one of them out a little bit. You know, D'Lo won what, Intercontinental Hardcore titles, did his thing. Rock obviously elevated. Simmons ended up doing great things with APA. And then obviously what Mark Henry, he did his thing to the Hall of Pain, to the Hall of Fame. And then even with Godfather, you know, coming out of that. But I thought that was interesting. He kind of talked about when the Nation got kind of put together and kind of how it was a group that kind of elevated all four of them after that a little bit. It was a good show. If you get a chance to watch it, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. And they just sat me at my table. It's dinner time tonight, so it's feeding time, as Ryback said, so. I got to bid you guys a two. So long time no talk. I'm glad you guys had to come.
All
who
right,
am I plugging?
Yeah, who are you plugging?
Did you have plugging? we'll give a shout out to Michelangelo's Italian Bistro in Noblesville. It's, I mean, we'll be honest, it's like straight up like Olive Garden adjacent type stuff. if I want to do a real shout out, I'd shout out Mama Carolla's and Broad Ripple. That's like my favorite, one of my favorite Italian spots ever. But we'll give some love to Michelangelo's here. So about okay. to go munch on some shrimp Alfredo. So that's the shout out. But yeah, take care, right. fellas. Appreciate you having me on.
See you, Fred. Absolutely. Have a good one, buddy. All right, that's Fred Fellner, KFAB Connection. Oh, man, the Knicks got everybody out there. Spike Lee, Chris Rock, Tracy Morgan. Oh, my goodness, they got everybody. Arsenio Hall, it looked like, was out there.
Oh,
they got everybody. They got everybody out there tonight on the front row. All right, John, we only got a couple topics left. I want to talk about the big one. It was expected but not expected. Coach K is going to retire one more season, the farewell ride. John Shire is named coach in waiting. It's official as of about an hour ago. They've named it. Shire will be the new Duke head coach. Sorry, Brad Stevens. You could have had a hell of a day. He did have a hell of a day. He could have even had more of a hell of a day if he would have stepped down as president and then named Duke. You imagine that? That would have been awesome. But Coach K stepping down, John, as me and you were both Duke fans, I think we're going to be okay. I know it's going to be sad not seeing Coach K on that sideline to lead that team, but it's staying in-house like most organizations, like Carolina did and stuff. But we got a new changing of the guard going on here in college basketball.
College basketball is about to change all the way around. With the transfer portal, with guys and gals as well, being able to make money off their name. College basketball is going to change all the way around. I think some of the older guard, the Roy Williams of the world and the Coach K's of the world, they kind of see that as something they can't navigate. And they always been kind of guys of change. If you remember, Coach K, you know what I'm saying, was underneath Bob Knight. Bob Knight in this coaching era, it would not work. You know what I'm saying? Same thing with Roy Williams. Roy Williams was under Dean Smith. And though Dean Smith was not as harsh or heavy-handed as Bob Knight, it's still somewhat of a change where you don't necessarily have total control of your program. I'm not saying total control of a child, of a kid's mind, but you don't necessarily have total control or say of, like, how you can build and continue to build your program. But look at all the people – you know what I'm saying, from Vernon Carey to the Johnson kid this year to, you know what I'm saying, that, you know, all the one-and-dones that Coach K has lost, two-and-dones, in Vernon Carey, you know what I'm saying, I'm just using him as an example, that he's lost over the last couple of seasons, Zion Williamson, you know what I'm saying, Cam Reddish, that he's lost. You know what I'm saying, whether those guys left, right, and to get fortune with the NBA, but, like, your program suffers when you don't have that another year with that guy that you spent so much time with. You know what I mean? That you put so much, you know what I'm saying, effort in coaching and to be a better player. You know what I mean? So it's gonna be, dude. I haven't lived in the world, and I'm 40 something years old. I haven't lived in the world without Coach K being on that sideline. You know what I mean? And that his name is synonymous with Duke basketball. He's the one that built it. He walks on water there. I don't even know why they have an athletic director. That he got some answers to, realistically. I would expect his last game to be something like Derek Jeter's send off, something like Kobe send off, where you have former players, whether it be Grant Hill, Bobby Hurley. Well, I mean, depending upon, you know what I'm saying, if they're playing or not, or coaching or not. You know what I'm saying? You have all the Duke guys in Cameron Indoor. And I think that's his last year for that as well.
Yeah, and go ahead and mark it. It'll probably be North Carolina at home on the final regular season game.
So imagine having Christian Laettner from Zion Williamson and, you know, anybody that played Ricky Price as well. You know what I mean? A lot of those Duke greats that played for Coach K, even Jay Billis in the house. We know Bob Knight, if God willing, to be there. We also know, God willing, Dick Vitale will be there as well. Hell, you know what I'm saying? All eyes will be there. You know what I'm saying? So it will be different. I hope that – I can't give you total, you know what I'm saying, like who's recruited and who's kind of retained. I know some guys that he had on his team declared for the NBA draft, and I know they ain't NBA players just yet, you know what I mean? but But so they'll be back. So can he win one more? I would be a little bit greedy. You know what I'm saying? If he can win one more. But it is just definitely changing the guard because, like I said, the dynamics of like who has the power in college basketball is getting ready to change significantly. And I don't know if we're saying that, Brandon. I don't know how much longer Coach Calipari has left down in Lexington.
Okay. Yeah, I almost say Jim Boeheim as well. I think Boeheim. Probably another one that's getting ready to has to be ready to wrap it up here soon. So,
yep.
What else? Oh, by the way, I did call John Shire. I just want to make it known, like I did my LeBron call, John Shire, head coach at Duke. I called that last year. So,
well, if you think about it, good call though, Brandon. But like none of the other satellites have done enough to.
Right.
To, you know what I'm saying, to lead Duke. You know what I'm saying? Wojo hasn't done enough. Tommy Amaker hasn't done enough. They had winning seasons where they were at, but just not enough to be, like, taking over Duke. And this is like a handing over the Camaro or handing over whatever, you know what I'm saying, fast car.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Just like Jim Katie handed over to Coach Painter. So,
yeah.
We'll see what John Shire
and
got.
And all this. You have a good chance here to possibly have your own little call shot. I won't say what it is just because we won't call it right now, but just between you and myself, a little teaser for the listeners. You gave me a call shot today for a head coaching position in the NBA for the Celtics. So we'll be interested to see if that comes a reality.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
So we'll see. Hey, I'll even throw Brandon Brantley's hat into the mix for the Boston Celtics. So go ahead and throw that out there.
Coach Brantley.
You probably don't want me to do that, but I just did it. So go ahead. If you don't have anything left, John, let's go ahead and wrap for tonight. I don't have anything left on my list here.
We can, man. We'll get in trouble, man, if we don't shout out both Chicago teams being number one in the division, man. I know as a Reds fan, you don't want to hear that. But the moon and the sun and Saturn and Jupiter are aligned, Brandon. The Cubs and the White Sox are the number one teams in their division. Can you believe it?
Shocker. Well, I mean, the White Sox, they got swept by the Yankees, and then they whirled off like 7, 8, 9 wins in a row. The Yankees
yep.
sweep the White Sox, and then they lose 7 or last 8. So, I mean, it's baseball, early baseball. What can I say?
Early baseball, for sure. Right.
So, other than that, that's all I've got, John. Wrap us up, my man.
No, man, I think we had a great show, man. Shout out to D-Cop for calling in. Shout out to K-Fabe Connections, Fred Felden for calling in and getting that good Italian he's having right now. Man, how could I forget our sponsors both? Scott K. Nichols, State Farm Insurance, and Mavericks Custom Motorsports down in Miami. Please, Crossroads listeners, support us. Support us by supporting those who support us. Go on, you know what I'm saying, click on those advertising links. Click on the link, like, share. Look at what they have to offer. look at people texting me right now, Brandon, about the Cubs, believe it or not.
Uh-oh.
I told you Chicago market is listening, man. But, like, nah, man. So, please. Please support those who support us, man, Crossroads listeners. And outside of that, I know me and Brandon have another great show lined up for everybody next week. Outside of that, man, thanks everybody for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Crossroads Sports Radio Show. You can find more episodes on iTunes and the Google Play Store. Be sure to like and subscribe for more Crossroads sports content.